afternoon, everybody.
Yes.
Hope you had a good day of sitting. And that it was a benefit to you. Maybe it was a little hard sometimes. Or maybe you had a totally peaceful day of just sound and body and sky. I hope you had a day like that. As you have been experiencing, this is a really simple practice. Really, really simple. It's maybe the simplest possible practice. Not necessarily easy all the time, but simple. All you have to do is sit and breathe, which you'd be doing anyway. And pay attention to the sitting and the breathing, and the mind and the heart, and see what happens. Keep your mind open. And then keep it up for a while. And start to extend, little by little, this expanded sense of being alive that sitting gives us, expanding it into all the aspects of our life. That's it. You know, there's no more instructions that really matter other than that. Although it's a lifetime's practice to realize, still though, pretty simple. This afternoon, I want to talk about one of my favorite Buddhist texts, Shantideva's Bodhisattvacharyavatara. That title is usually translated as Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And it's a poem, it's a book-length poem in many chapters. And it's what it sounds like. It's a guide to how to practice the Bodhisattva path. And I just want to talk a little bit about one of the chapters in that text, my favorite chapter on Kshanti Paramita, or patience. I always like to bring this one up. It gives me a great delight to contemplate Shantideva's fabulous teachings on patience, which begins with Shantideva explaining to us all the advantages in suffering. Suffering is very good, he explains. What? not what we usually think. Who wants to suffer? Nobody wants to suffer. Suffering is bad, right? We want to get rid of it. That's why they call it suffering. They would call it something else if we wanted to do it. It's pretty obvious that suffering is suffering and we don't want it. And isn't that one reason why we're here, right? Isn't that what the Buddha said? The ending of suffering, that's the path. But you don't have to practice Buddhism to want to end suffering. Everybody wants to end suffering. In fact, everyone is working overtime trying to prevent suffering. Scheming all the time about how to avoid suffering, trying to get everything organized just so, inside and out, so as to avoid suffering whenever possible. And so that's why the practice of patience, as Shantideva discusses it, is so profoundly weird, because he goes in the opposite direction. Because the practice of Kshanti Paramita, of patient forbearance, is exactly to go toward rather than away from suffering, to accept suffering, to tolerate suffering, to be able to endure suffering. And to do that for the benefit of our ultimate well-being. So Shantideva says, suffering is a really good thing, a positive thing, because it is the best way to develop in just the ways that we need to develop and otherwise would never develop. So the whole chapter is pretty much the opposite of everything that we think and believe about suffering. Shantideva is espousing what appears to the ordinary eye as a totally upside down viewpoint. But I don't think that this upside down viewpoint is limited just to Shantideva. The truth is that the Buddhist path, if you really think about what it's teaching us, is very radical. Very, very radical. So in this chapter, one of the main things Shantideva is talking about is anger. Specifically, anger at the other people who are giving us so much trouble. Those who are harming us, abusing us, or in various ways, pissing us off. Now, in the ordinary way that we look at life, this is like pretty much accepted by anyone, wherever you go. We are all independent beings. We are responsible for our actions. And therefore, if there's an independent being who does bad stuff, especially to us, it makes sense to get angry at them because they're doing harm. Not to get angry at such a person, or at the very least, if we're not angry, at least we have to oppose them vigorously, would be morally incorrect. It would be passive, it would be lazy, it would be amoral. We are morally obliged to resist. But Shantideva goes to great lengths, as you'll see in a minute, to make an urgent case for the opposite point of view. He says, more or less, that just as we would never get mad at an inanimate object that we bump into, or a disease that we happen to get, because, you know, these things happen, no one's to blame, really, causes and conditions. In exactly the same way, Shantideva says, it doesn't make sense to get mad at people who do terrible things to us, because just like the object we bump into or the disease we contract, these people's actions are simply the results of causes and conditions, and it's really not their fault. They are the victims of conditions just the way we are. He says, people don't like wake up in the morning and decide, today I'm going to be really angry. They don't. Or today I'm going to be a rotten, nasty person. Nobody gets up in the morning and makes that decision. It just happens. People just happen to be that way. They didn't ask for it. They didn't intend it. It happens because of the causes and conditions of their lives. It's like the old story. I'm sure you've all heard this story about the captain of a boat who was sailing, you know, going along in his boat, and all of a sudden he's rammed by another boat, and this captain starts cursing out the captain of the other boat that rammed him. He's like completely apoplectic. He's yelling, he's waving his arms, screeching, until he looks more closely at the other boat and sees there's absolutely no one in that boat, that it was just a boat adrift. And then immediately he's not angry anymore. Well, it's always that way, Shantideva says. People are not really responsible for their actions. What happens just happens. There's never anyone to blame. And if there's something to get mad at, it's not the person. It's maybe the anger or the greed or whatever it is that has caused that person to behave the way he did. And since everybody has some anger or greed in us, how can we really blame another person any more than we would blame ourselves? In general, I think it is a powerful Buddhist perspective that it's up to us to take responsibility for our own action and state of mind. And this paradox is the genius insight of the Buddha, I think, who taught that in any moment of time, we find ourselves in a situation that has arisen due to infinite causes and conditions. In other words, the pickle we are in right now is absolutely not our fault. But we have the power and the obligation to take responsibility to act for the good within the dictates of that situation. So there's no question about our taking responsibility. But it's not our job to think that the other person needs to take responsibility. That's their job. It's up to them to do that. And we pay attention to our own responsibility, and we don't think it makes any sense at all to tell other people what or how to do, or really hold them accountable for their actions, because we are fully confident that they will be held accountable. Causes and conditions will see to that by and by. But if we focus our effort on holding them accountable, then we will lose our chance to practice patience, patient forbearance. And the truth of the matter is, we probably won't really be able to be successful in holding them accountable anyway, not until they're ready. And this reminds me of what I think is conventional wisdom in the recovery community, which is really a genius movement. The recovery movement is really quite amazing. And I think this is what they say in the recovery movement, that it really doesn't work out to try to talk the addict out of his or her addiction, or somehow try to manipulate or soothe them into doing so. Because addiction only ends when the addict takes responsibility. That's the whole essence of the recovery movement, as far as I understand it. Nobody else can do that for the addict. In fact, the best thing that we can do for that person is to look at our own behavior, to see how we might be colluding with the addict without knowing we are. To change our own conduct is probably the best thing that we could do for that person, rather than insisting that they change. And as always with Buddhist teaching, you have to always remember this. The point is not whether something is true or not true. In this case, is it true that people are not responsible for their actions, that they're simply conditioned to do what they do? Is that true? As Shanti Deva seems to be saying, well, probably it's true, and probably it's not true. Probably both sort of are true, you know. I mean, it certainly looks like people are independent agents, and we can look at our own mind and say, I decided to come to Green Gulch today, and I came. So I am an independent agent. I mean, we do seem to decide how we're going to behave. So maybe Shanti Deva is really not right about this at all. But in Buddhist teaching, the point is not whether something is absolutely true. Because the truth is, it might be impossible to determine. I mean, philosophers have been arguing for many centuries about whether or not there's free will and what that means. It's not a question of solving that argument. The point is, what are the consequences of your view? And here, Shanti Deva definitely wants to promote a view that will induce us to practice patient forbearance. Shanti Deva thinks that it's going to be way better for us to have a forgiving heart, a gentle heart, when it comes to the conduct of others. So he emphasizes that others cannot help it when they behave badly. And that if we're going to get upset with them when they do it, that's going to be bad for us. And probably also bad for them. Whereas, if we take the opportunity to use the energy of our fear and loathing and moral outrage to develop patience rather than aggression and blame, everybody's going to be a lot better off. And it's going to be a lot better world. Anyway, he goes on to say, and this is my favorite part, because it's so true, it's so ridiculous, but it's so true. He says, you know, if somebody beats you up for no reason, right? Two things are required. That other person and your body. And since it's your body, and you're responsible for it, and this body appears here due to causes and conditions in one's own karmic stream, why don't you get just as upset with yourself that he beat you up as you are with the other person? After all, if you didn't have a body, the blows would just sort of strike the air and nothing would happen. So whose fault is it really? I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's the truth. He also refers to the Buddhist teachings on karma that say that what happens to you in this lifetime is the result of actions in the past. And one can really easily see how that's true by observing, you know, one's own experience. So he says, if someone attacks you in this life, it's because of your own evil conduct in past times. Might even be past lives. So when someone attacks you, you should be mad at yourself, because it's your fault, not theirs, that they've done this to you. They're only the agent, the instrument. And anyway, it's a good thing that they've done this to you, because you've been carrying this, you know, really terrible karmic debt. Now it's discharged. Now that they beat you up. Thank you so much for beating me up. I feel so much better now. Before I was carrying around this weight and now it's relieved. I told you, this is the opposite of everything that we think and believe. But Shantideva is totally sincere in all these arguments. Now, we're all psychologists, every one of us here. I mean, some of us are professionals and some of us are amateurs, but everybody's a psychologist because you read the paper and the magazine and everybody knows all psychology. And we know that that's a terrible way to look at it. The way that Shantideva just said it, terrible. I mean, especially if you're somebody in an abusive relationship, say, no, it's a lot better for you to be angry at your abuser. Otherwise, how do you break out of this horrible cycle? Or let's say you're a person who has been conditioned to constantly run yourself down, tell yourself how terrible you are, and so on, blame yourself for everything. Then the last thing in the world that you want to hear is that you should always blame yourself for everything. It's never the other person, it's always you. No, that's the last thing you should be told. Shantideva, however, pays no attention to any of that. He's not interested in any of that. The only thing he's interested in doing is showing us that people are always to be understood and forgiven, and that this is the ultimate hope and the ultimate practice, even if you're a person who's been abused. Though it might take a while to come around to this, and maybe it's not the right practice for you now, but don't ignore it. In addition, he says, there's a big difference between the body and the mind and the emotions. Because the body, yes, it can be beat up. It can be wounded. It can be, you know, seriously debilitated. But an emotion cannot be hurt. And the mind cannot be hurt. Emotions, thoughts, all kind of mental phenomena come and go. I mean, we may have disturbing thoughts and emotions, but the thoughts and the emotions themselves cannot get a black eye or a broken half a thought, right? A thought is indivisible and indestructible. So, in the case of insult, or someone speaking ill of us behind our backs, the truth is there's no actual harm being done. Whatever harm there is illusory, and then mostly is caused by our own afflictive emotions, our own reactivity to what was said. So why do we want to do that? Why do we want to churn up even more afflictive emotion because of an illusory hurt by adding on top of that anger and resentment, which basically the other person has no idea we're even feeling it. We're the ones who are being eaten up alive by the anger and the resentment. And then he says, in any of these situations, there are always only two possibilities in relation to the other person. Either the other person just is a mean, nasty, or childish, foolish, terrible person who naturally acts like it. There are people like that. They're rare, but you can find them. Sometimes they run whole countries, you know? And there's a good reason why. How do you think you get to run a country if you're not, don't have the force, right? But Shanti Devi says, what's the point of getting mad at a person like that? He says, it would be like getting mad at a fire for being hot. I mean, it's the nature of a fire to be hot. Put the fire out, but don't get mad at the fire for being hot. So that's one possibility. It's a really rotten person. The other possibility is the person is not that really that rotten. They're basically okay, but once in a while, maybe more than they should, they go off. Something happens and they go off. Well, what's the use of getting mad at them in that case? That would be like getting mad at the sky when a cloud comes into it. The cloud just comes. The sky doesn't say, cloud, come over here, it just comes. The person doesn't ask to go off, she can't help it. So you have to deal with it, but with a forgiving and loving heart, because what's the sense in being angry in that case? Anyway, Shanti Devi says, as I alluded to earlier, that a person who abuses us or is otherwise a terrible person is going to pay for it. You don't have to do that. Causes and conditions inevitably will come around one way or the other, sometime or another, to pay her back for her conduct. That's an ironclad rule. If not in this life, then in some other life. In other words, in some way, sometime, bad conduct leads to bad consequences and good to good consequences. That's one of the most powerful articles of faith in Buddhism. But you don't just take it on faith. If you practice zazen and observe your own mind, you will believe that. Because you'll see it. You'll see how that happens. You'll see how that works. Your eyes will see it. It really is true. And so, Shanti Devi says, if that's true, if it's true that good actions lead to good consequences, bad actions lead to bad consequences, if that's really true, then, while it looks like she's abusing you, actually, you're abusing her. Because, thanks to her abuse of you, and you know, She probably didn't kill you. Whatever she did, maybe wasn't that bad, but thanks to that abuse of you, she is going to suffer a lot at some time later. She's going to have a lot of trouble because she's that, you know, the consequences of being that kind of person do not go unanswered. She's going to have to pay for that. Whereas you, if you respond to the abuse with patience, are going to receive enormous benefits. Your heart is going to open. You're going to grow enormously in wisdom and compassion. So she actually did you a big favor with her terrible behavior when you're practicing patient forbearance. Are you convinced yet? But you know, the logic of this is really, crazy as it is, it's quite unassailable. When you think about it, what could anyone possibly do to you that would cause you harm in such a way that they would really deserve your anger? Yes, people regularly harm our body, steal our property, they can ruin our reputation, they can destroy our self-esteem, causing us to feel terrible about ourselves. But all of this, our body, our possessions, our sense of self, we lose all of that anyway. It's never been ours. Our having these things and protecting them has actually been, thinking we have these things, that is, and protecting them has actually been the source of most of our suffering. Dogen says, awakening means drop body and mind. That's what awakening is. Drop body and mind. And that means be free of body and mind. Understanding that the small body and mind we have been led to think we possess and that is ours and that should be protected was never ours in the first place, and it was never who we were in the first place. Our true body and mind is beyond our conceptions and cannot be hurt. Imagine knowing that and living that. So Shanti Deva says, it's better to practice the way of virtue than to defend what you can't defend anyway, and what you've been suffering all this time in your effort to defend. Just don't try. It doesn't matter what we have or who we are. It doesn't make any difference how long we live. The only thing that matters is a good heart. And so we should cultivate a good heart above all else. He writes in verse number 67, there's about 150 verses on this, 160 in this chapter. He says in verse 67, some do evil things because of ignorance, and some respond to the evil things done to them with anger because of ignorance. Which of them is without fault? Which of them is in error? In other words, we will learn through our long and honest observation in our sitting and our living that all human beings are in exactly the same boat. Whether we're the ones causing harm or the ones who act unwisely as a result of having been harmed, it really amounts to the same thing. Whatever bad actions and qualities we have observed in others, eventually we realize, you know, that's in me too. Same thing. Maybe so far I've been lucky enough not to manifest those things and behave that way, but who knows what would happen under other conditions. I've been lucky so far. And I say all this, you know, not just to report to you what I read in a book, but I say all this because I've noticed all of this stuff to be so over a long lifetime, with plenty of sorrow and sadness and seen a lot of bad stuff. We are, all of us, caught up in a big, big human mess of harming and resisting and harming and resisting, of being abused and then turning around and abusing because we've been abused, or being destroyed because we've been abused, and in our destruction bringing others down with us. I mean, this is a terrible human drama of suffering over a long time. I always say, you know, you think this is bad, it's worse than you think. It's worse than you think. It's been going on throughout the generations. To tease it all out and solve it by assigning blame this way and that way is naive. In the biggest picture of things, I really think it's the truth that there's no one to blame, or everyone is to blame. Same thing. Of course, sometimes we do hold somebody responsible. We go to court, we put them in jail. And if we do that, it's because we know that it is practical and it is necessary. Not because we're so consumed with hatred and a desire for vengeance that we need the satisfaction of it, and we want to be the agents of punishment and prevail. Not because of that. We never, ever forget about compassion and understanding. Even the worst people are as they are for a reason. And they have their function in the big human picture of things. And that's why there's so many Buddhist prison projects all over the country, offering compassionate teaching and practice to incarcerated people who might be innocent sometimes and might be guilty sometimes. So that's what Shantideva tells us about the practice of patient forbearance. Then he shifts in the same chapter and starts writing about the practice of mudita, or sympathetic joy. So in other words, first we reduce and even eliminate our bitterness about people who've harmed us or whom we think of as bad or evil, and we work on our practice to try to be more loving and forgiving, thinking about all that Shantideva has said. But then, having done that, we notice lots of people. So we focus on the people, right, who hurt us. We can, like, not see anything else but those people. But once we have some purchase on that, we notice, well, there's a lot of people around who are not hurting us. Mostly people are not hurting us. Mostly people are not so rotten or so wounded or so mean-spirited. Maybe a lot of people are happy and having a good time. So we notice, finally, when we got over all this other stuff, that, oh, look at all these people being happy. And if we're honest, Shantideva writes, we notice that we have a little resentment about those people. Or we're a little critical of them. Yeah, she won the Pulitzer Prize, but she's not that good a poet, really. Not really. Not as good as my friends. And that helps to reduce in our minds their happiness and their success. So we end up, sometimes you don't even notice it, you know, but we end up regularly being cynical about people who are doing well. If someone's happy, you know, I don't like it. They're too rich. They shouldn't be happy. So that, we have that. We become cynical, you know, by people who are doing well, maybe a little envious. Maybe we feel that if we didn't denigrate them, then we would have to compare ourselves to them and we would come up short. So we have to make sure that they're not so great. But Chanti Deva says, no, no, we're doing something really very bad to ourselves when we do that. We should cultivate happiness for them when they're doing well and they're happy. We ought to see that the self and the other are not really different. And their happiness is actually our happiness. And their success is actually our success. We feel that way about our grandchildren or our children, but why wouldn't we feel that way about everybody? What's the difference, really? And this is a great practice. I really recommend this. I've done this practice a lot because it increases by millions of times our causes for happiness. Instead of waiting for something good to happen to ourselves or somebody close to us, which doesn't happen every day, we can take joy in anybody's happiness. How about the happiness of the birds out there who seem to be so chipper and cheerful out there on the feeder? Why don't we have a lot of happiness from that? Or the gladiola flowers that are so exuberant out there in the garden. They seem very happy. Why don't we share in their happiness? The causes of happiness are all around us. Pretty much everywhere we look, if only we would open our eyes. And this is important. Delighting in the happiness of others is a way of fortifying ourselves when we're suffering. Even when we're suffering, the sun is still shining and the birds are still singing and the plants are still growing. This is a practice to notice that and take that into ourselves. What's the difference between, if I'm looking at that flower, who am I in that moment? Why am I obsessed with my anger, my resentment, my disappointment? So practicing sympathetic joy is a way that we can grow in our patient forbearance. And when we know how to do that, we will never be afraid of the future or of anything that could possibly happen. Everybody knows bad things happen. Do we think that we're going to see a time in which there will be no bad things happening in the future? No, there'll never be such a time. Also, good things happen. Do we think we'll see a time when we will never see good things happen in the future? No, there will always be good things and bad things happening in the future. We don't need to be afraid when we know that we can practice patient forbearance. So, as I say, I take all these teachings very personally, and I've thought about them for a long time, and I've observed my own experience for a long time, and I totally believe them. It is so clear to me that people who behave badly really do not know what they're doing. They have no idea what they're doing. They have a very small point of view. They think it makes sense to do these things. They just don't know. And 100% of the time, they suffer for that. I don't need to punish them. I don't need to get mad at them. I don't need to tell everybody how bad they are. And if I do do those things, immediately I can notice their effect on me. I don't want to have that mind. So I try not to do that. Because I don't want to suffer dark states of mind and unhappiness if I can help it. And I really think that my looking at it this way over many years has really helped me a lot with my human relationships, which are on the whole pretty pleasant. And I don't think it would be so pleasant if I didn't take these teachings to heart. But for sure, it has happened to me more than once that people get really angry with me for something that I have said or done or failed to say or do. And they yell at me, or they speak ill of me, and they really thought, wow, he's a terrible, terrible person. No one has punched me. No one has knocked me down. I have not been knifed and never shot so far. And I'm really glad about that. I feel very fortunate. There's a lot of people who couldn't say that. This is true. I have that. These things have not happened to me, and I'm really, really lucky. Sometimes somebody gets mad at me, and I don't understand exactly why, and they explain it to me, and I listen, but I'm not sure I really understand. And so I could easily think, well, maybe it has nothing to do with me. Maybe it's something in them, rather than what I actually said or did. But I don't know that. I could say that, but I don't really know that. And anyway, is there really an in them, an in me at all? Aren't we all, when we're in relationship with one another, each other's inside and outside? So when people have that attitude toward me, I always take it to heart. And it's hard. I suffer. I don't try to defend myself. I don't deny it. At least I try not to. And I try to practice exactly what Shantideva is talking about, just the way he talks about it. I try to look and see that the other person is suffering, just like I am suffering. And I pray and I hope that the other person will find peace sometime. And I often, in some cases, carry around the suffering and the remorse for the rest of my life, up until now anyway, because I really do feel badly. You know, who doesn't feel badly to hurt another person? Also, it's really good for me not to forget that I caused someone to suffer. Even if I don't really know how I did it, at least I know that it happened, and it's good for me to not forget that. So, that's what I wanted to tell you today. A little bit different from Zazen, but not really, not at all. Right? So this, what I said, you know, is a little bit out there, right? So maybe you think this is really a little nuts, you know. I don't think that's right. Anyway, so that's what we'll talk about. What do you think? What's your understanding of these things? You heard, I did my best anyway, to sort of summarize the things that Shantideva says, and I think Shantideva is like not unique among Buddhist teachers. Shantideva's view is, I think, a very ordinary view in Buddhism. So what do you make of this? What about your own human relations and your own experience? And maybe you heard something that was said that struck you as really, really true or absolutely not true and bothered you. And if there was something like that, bring that up and say why. So let's get in groups of three and talk about, in general, these teachings on patient forbearance and see what you think of them.